Daniel, thank you for being on 2SER. How are you?
Good afternoon. Great to be with you.
Nice to have you, Daniel. So, look, tell me, bushfires are a pretty common occurrence here in Australia. How do you think that, you know, bushfires like those of Black Saturday have impacted Australian communities?
So I guess fire is certainly a very natural part of basically all of Australia. Most of Australia. The thing about Black Saturday was that it was a particularly intense bushfire. It's catastrophic under the system we use for classifying them. In terms of the way it impacted upon Australian communities, you just mentioned the horrible deaths. Black Saturday, there were a few precursor fires that were quite similar to it. The 1983 Ash Wednesday bushfires, the 1939 Black Friday bushfires, and Black Saturday has really been the worst of those type of the really big ones with the big wind changes.
Yeah, I remember watching the news coverage of it, and the wind was changing over and over again, and it was just spreading these fires all over Victoria. It was quite tragic. So, I mean, given those kinds of conditions, given the fact that, you know, our environment is becoming more unpredictable, have you seen our response change in the aftermath of tragic bushfires like of Ash Wednesday, like of Black Saturday? How has our response changed?
It's a really good question, and there are a lot of these questions being thrown around right now. Anniversary is really good for reassessing progress and that sort of thing. One of the best things that has come out since the Black Saturday bushfires is agencies are now much better at communicating with people who are at risk. So during the Black Saturday bushfires, you know, there were anecdotes about people ringing up officials and being told that what they were seeing with their own eyes couldn't happen because the official advice was several hours out of date. Yeah. These days, we've got much better technology in place and much better systems. On the other side of it, there's been some research that's shown that while people are generally much more aware of their bushfire risk since Black Saturday, their level of preparedness, so, you know, the sort of preparations they put in, the precautions, whether they have a fire plan, how detailed the fire plan that is, that level of preparedness has not actually increased overall. So that's quite a troubling result.
Yeah, why do you think that hasn't really changed that much? Is it because people become a little bit complacent in the government's response, or?
This is more to do with individual plans rather than the government, I'd say. I think complacency is an easy answer. We have to also remember that people are moving, out of the cities into these suburbs on the edge of wilderness, or rather green areas, I should say, in massive numbers. Like the big expansion out into these suburbs on what's sometimes called the wildland urban interface, or out into those sort of towns on the outskirts of cities, that's a huge demographic change. And a lot of these people who are moving there may not be quite aware. They might have seen a brochure or something like that, but they don't quite realise just how strong bushfires can be.
Yeah, it can be quite difficult. And look, I know that the Victorian government's response to bushfires is changing and adapting. Just back to the government and the institutional response, I guess, because that needs to be stronger if we can't see that kind of individual response changing as of yet. But tell me a little bit more about how the Victorian government is looking at traditional methods of fire prevention in fire-prone areas.
So I guess you're talking about Aboriginal fire management there?
Yeah, exactly.
Just very quickly, so Aboriginal Australians, before European settlement, Aboriginal Australians used fire for a whole bunch of different reasons, and this wasn't the same across the continent. Different groups used fire in different ways for different purposes. The most understandable one is driving animals to hunt them. They use fire to encourage certain plants, kangaroos to graze. They use plants to encourage, use fire to encourage certain plants to signal, to clear areas for your snakes and that sort of thing. What the Victorian government is doing, it's quite interesting actually, is trying to encourage what's called cultural burning on publicly owned and also some privately owned land. So there are parts of Australia in northern and central Australia that are owned by Aboriginal groups where Aboriginal burning has continued or has been restarted for several decades. in Victoria, this strategy is actually happening on land that isn't owned by Aboriginal people. So these cultural burns, I think there are 27 at least planned just with the Jarjawarong over the next 2 years. I could be wrong about that, but there is definitely a much stronger movement happening with this in Victoria. And we're seeing this in New South Wales as well.
Yeah. So, look, that's really interesting because I obviously know about they've got backburning in New South Wales, and that happens all the time near where I live, which is up near the Ku'ingai National Park. But how does, Indigenous burning methods, how do they differ from more, I guess, institutionalized backburning?
Yeah, so backburning is a firefighting technique that happens while a flame's advancing towards you. Prescribed burning is, I guess, the term used to describe preparation burning, so in spring, in autumn, in winter. Yeah, Ku'ingai, there's heaps around there. I'll put it this way. I was speaking to an Aboriginal staff member of a group that's doing cultural burning, and he said to me that Aboriginal people didn't used to exclusively burn during 9 to 5. So Aboriginal burning, they protected different assets than we do. So, we have large houses, infrastructure, roads, all that sort of thing to protect. The kind of burning that we do has much more restrictions than would have been the case while Aboriginal people were burning. We have to take smoke into account, all the sort of regulatory and legislative requirements. Some of these burns are planned 1 year, 2 years in advance, and they have to sort through a whole bunch of things to do that. Yeah. Aboriginal burning, that wouldn't have been the case.
Right. Okay. So do you think that this kind of strategy could be effective in the future? Do you think that, it could help us prevent future fires, prevent future disasters like Black Saturday, like Black Friday?
I think there's a great deal of promise in it, not just because of the fact that the burning for fuel reduction, the prescribed burning, will be done. Also in the sense of encouraging a greater familiarity with fire. So fire in itself, I think, needs to be viewed not as inherently a bad thing. There is good fire and bad fire. And more of the good fire can help prevent the bad fire. So, more fuel reduction burning and with an Aboriginal burning ethic, Aboriginal burning comfort with fire, might just help us prepare against catastrophic wildfires in the future.
Definitely. And it could, signal in a new era of culture change around, how we view fire, how we respond to fire, and how maybe even on an individual level we prepare for fire.
Absolutely.
Look, that sounds really promising indeed.